If you're thinking about buying a new car here sometime in the next few months, and maybe you're a little bit confused, you haven't quite been able to make up your mind, or you have some questions, I think we should be able to help this morning here in this hour of Focus 580. Our guest is Rick Paul. He's the automotive editor for Consumer Reports, the magazine or the organization that just put out the April issue of their magazine, and it's the annual auto issue in which they rate cars, the best and the worst. They do that in a number of categories. They look at things like safety and fuel efficiency and which cars are better if you have a family, which cars are most reliable, which cars their owners are happiest with, all of that kind of information. And in addition to that, some information on how it is that you, when you go into the dealership to try to buy your car, you go about trying to get yourself the best deal. And of course, Consumer Reports has been doing this now for a number of years, and this is just the latest. So if there is a new car in your future, you might want to go out and take a look at the magazine. And of course, here, questions are welcome too. We can't tell you what kind of car to buy, but if you are seeking information or you're trying to sort out what might be best for you out of a couple of different choices, well, maybe we can do that. Rick Paul joined Consumer Reports in 2000. He is responsible for the automotive editorial content in Consumer Reports monthly issues and also their special publications. Before going to work for Consumer Reports, he was senior feature editor at Motor Trend magazine for 9 years. And when he was doing that, he produced road tests and other editorial features, specializing in car care, consumer issues, travel features, and in-car electronics. And he is joining us this morning by telephone. Questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome, and I know he'll do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. So again, 333-WILL and toll free 800-222-WILL. Mr. Paul, hello.
Hi, David. How you doing?
I'm good, thanks. And yourself?
Pretty good.
Thanks for talking with us. We certainly appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
There are a lot of different sorts of things we could talk about. I guess maybe one thing that kind of caught my eye, one of the kind of headlines, I guess, was the results of your reliability testing and survey, and that you found, surprisingly, some people, maybe not, I shouldn't use a word like that, you found that compared to European cars, that American cars actually are doing pretty well, better than European cars. The Asian makes, I guess, still have the lead, but that American products are performing better now than they have.
Right, yeah. Every year we do a survey of our magazine subscribers, which is about 4 million. And also, for the first time last year, we also surveyed over 1 million of our website subscribers. We got about 675,000 responses back on various cars that they own. And this is a phenomenal rate. It's many times more responses than any other auto reliability survey that's available to consumers. And when we crunch all the numbers, we divvy them up different ways, but one of the ways we look at them is look at the automakers by nationality. And yes, here, for the first time, actually, since we've been looking at these kind of numbers in about 25 years, we see that on the average, U.S. cars have been more reliable in that survey than European cars.
That's really kind of surprising, and there are some, I don't mean to be a booster for any particular brands, but you have automobiles like Volvos and Mercedes-Benz that have this reputation of being a well-made car, and their level of reliability is not as good as American nameplates, Buick, Saturn, Pontiac, yeah. Dodge, although the ones that are on the top are Lexus, Infiniti, Honda, Toyota, Acura, Mazda,
yeah.
Cars like that.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to sell the European cars short either, because actually they did improve slightly over the previous year themselves. Mm-hmm. If we look at all vehicles across the board, They actually we measure reliability in terms of problems per 100 vehicles. And last year, for instance, the average for all vehicles was 18 problems per 100. The year before it was 21, so it had come down last year. And now this, in our latest survey, it came down to 17 problems per 100 vehicles. So across the board, they did get a little better. The European vehicles went from 21 to 20, so even they got incrementally better, too. It's just that the U.S. cars dropped by a fairly substantial amount, from 21 to 18 in our latest survey. And that's a pretty good drop in problems.
Okay. Well, we have already a couple of people here lined up and ready to go, and they would like to talk with you, and we will not make them wait. Start here with line number one, and this caller is in Champaign. Hello.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We're interested in a 2004 Honda Pilot and would like to know what your view is on that.
We like the Honda Pilot a lot. It did very well in our testing. It has very good reliability. It has excellent crash protection in the crash test done by the government and insurance industry. And in fact, we picked it as one of our top picks in the April issue, which is basically the best cars in 10 different categories.
Mm-hmm.
And the Pilot won in a category we call three-row SUVs, which is, of course, SUVs that have a third-row seat.
Mm-hmm.
So for people that need the extra passenger room, up to 7 or 8 passengers. And the Pilot is, it's a car-based SUV. It handles very well. It has a versatile interior. The third-row seat folds down flat, and it has a split back. So it's very nice because that allows you to put it down quickly when you need to load cargo into the car, mm-hmm. and then raise it again if you want to put passengers back there without having to worry about taking it out. So we like the Pilot a lot.
Now, what kind of gas mileage does it get?
In our fuel economy tests, it got 19 miles per gallon in mixed highway and city driving. And that is pretty good for a midsize SUV. In fact, it's the best fuel economy we've gotten in that size car.
Okay. Sounds great. Thank you very much.
All right, very good. Thank you. We'll go next to another caller. This is Urbana, and it's line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple of questions. The first one is, we've had a Ford Escort since 1998, and it's been a good car for us, but now we have a baby, and we've considered buying a different car. We still want a smaller car for environmental reasons or a mid-sized car that performs similarly to a small car in terms of gas mileage, but we want something that it's easy to get small children in and out of. Do you have any suggestions?
Let's see. We're actually wrapping up a test right now on a vehicle. You mentioned fuel economy, and you mentioned that you want to stay with a smaller car, We're actually finishing up test on a Toyota Prius hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've looked at something like that, but it is a sedan. It's a four-door hatchback is what it is. And it provides easy access to the back seat for putting children in and out. And it gets excellent gas mileage because it combines a electric motor with a gas engine. In fact, we got 44 miles per gallon overall. That's, again, in mixed highway and city driving with that car. And that's the highest, or I should say it's the best gas mileage we've ever gotten in a 5-passenger vehicle.
Okay. I wanted to ask you about the differences between driving a hybrid car in a big city with lots of stop-and-go traffic versus a smaller city with more fluid traffic.
Really no difference. The hybrid, especially this new Prius, it works just like any other car. It's very transparent in terms of its electric motor. It starts easily. It runs. I think a lot of people, I think, still confuse hybrids with the original kind of dedicated electric cars that came out in the 90s, where those had to be plugged in every night, and they had to they didn't get very good range. You often had to, you know, your charge ran out, you know, pretty quickly, so you didn't get a lot of miles for it. But these hybrids basically combine an electric motor with a gas engine, and they and that allows them to operate just like a normal car. There's no range problems. Acceleration is good. Fuel economy is excellent. Emissions. Well, the Prius, for instance, is classified as a near zero emission vehicle by the California Air Resources Board. So emissions are super clean. If you're looking at other small cars, we also like the Ford Focus. We like the Honda Civic. There's also a Honda Civic Hybrid version, too. We also like the Toyota Corolla.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you for the call. And again, other questions are certainly welcome. Our guest is Rick Paul. He's the automotive editor at Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports now out with the April auto issue. So if you're thinking about buying a car, new or used, you might want to take a look at it. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I guess myself, I'm probably among those people who still isn't quite sure of the concept of the hybrid and exactly how, and I understand all the things about how the emissions are low and the gas mileage is good, and it somehow combines a gasoline engine and an electric engine, but I guess I'm still not quite sure how this thing works and what makes it different from an exclusively gasoline-powered internal combustion engine car.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's the beauty of a hybrid is that it's the automakers have developed this technology to make it as seamless as possible for those who are used to conventional gasoline engines. Basically, what they do is they take a small gasoline engine. They couple with an electric motor. Now, depending on the company, it works in different ways, but I'll take the Toyota Prius, for example. That has a computer-controlled system where it can operate only on electric, or it can operate only on the gas motor, or it can combine the two when necessary to, for instance, to get extra power when you need quick acceleration or something like that. And it does it all seamlessly. You basically don't know any of this is going on under the hood, and you just stop, put gas in it when you need it, and keep on going. So it's very seamless for people that are used to normal cars. In fact, I drove one in this morning, so it's fresh on my mind.
Mm-hmm. And where does the electric power to power the electric part of this come from?
Well, there is a battery pack. And the battery pack gets charged while the vehicle is being driven. Mm-hmm. That's in contrast to dedicated electric cars that have no gasoline engine, but they need to be recharged by plugging them in basically every night. The hybrids recharge themselves as you're driving. Also, the brake, when you brake, they actually use some of the braking energy to help recharge the batteries too. So the battery. Is battery pack is constantly being recharged, so it always has power to power the electric motor. Mm.
So now there are a few models of these kind of cars, these hybrids, available. Toyota has one, and Honda has one, and apparently their Lexus is going to make a hybrid SUV, and Ford is planning also a hybrid SUV. Mm-hmm. So there will be a few of those models out there. And I guess I can imagine, though, some people being hesitant, you know, the old advice that we all got about never buy a car in its first year of production, because it is kind of a new technology. I think some people might be a little bit hesitant to jump into it.
Yeah, we certainly understand that. And sure, it is a still relatively new technology, and we won't know, you know, how durable all aspects of it are for years yet. But we've been very encouraged in that in our reliability surveys, the Prius and the Honda Civic Hybrid have done very well. In fact, the Prius is one of the most reliable cars in our survey. And that's really saying something, considering it is relatively new technology. Now, Toyota, this Prius, again, the Prius won one of our top pick slots in the green car category. And this is Toyota's second generation. So Toyota has been making hybrids for a number of years now. In fact, they released the first Prius in Japan a couple years before they brought it here. And Honda, again, has also been producing hybrid cars, for a number of years now. So they are getting experience under their belt. The new Prius is more fuel efficient and quicker and roomier than the previous one, but still costs about the same, which is a good trick in itself. And then, like you said, we're going to be seeing more versions coming out. And I think as more appear, people become more familiar with this as being an option that they should look into. The Ford will have an Escape hybrid this summer. Honda will introduce a hybrid version of the Accord, I think, in this fall. And Lexus, Toyota are going to have SUV versions of the Lexus RX and the Toyota Highlander coming up soon, too. So we're going to be seeing more range and more variety of hybrid vehicles. And I think, so far the ones have been small vehicles. Going forward, we're going to start seeing more midsize cars and SUVs and things like that, which is really kind of where they're needed most. Where that's where the hybrid technology is most needed.
Mm-hmm. So, in order to is the main issue there being able to improve the mileage on those vehicles?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and certainly, for people, a lot of people are interested in SUVs because they're versatile. They're very practical, and yet they're a lot of people are hesitant because of the fuel economy. So by having a hybrid power plant, this could, bring basically the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. Now, in these larger vehicles, you're probably not going to be seeing fuel economy as good as the small vehicles. You know, in a SUV or a midsize sedan, we're probably not going to be seeing 44 miles per gallon overall. But they should be measurably better than a conventional version.
Okay. We have a number of callers here. Let's get right back to the phones. And I think our next caller is line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Yes, hi. I am a very big fan of the Cooper Mini, both its looks and handling. And I guess I have a couple of reservations about getting one, and I wondered if I could get your comments on it. I guess my main concern is the fact that I live in a community where there's not a dealer, so getting it serviced would mean getting it up to Chicago or Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of my biggest concerns, but I just sort of wondered what your comments are on the car as a whole and sort of how to weigh those issues.
Well, the Mini Cooper is certainly a fun car to drive. There's no doubt about that, and it's great looking. It's been interesting to see some of the information come in on that. It did well in our tests, and in fact, when we did what we call owner satisfaction ratings, which is also based on our annual survey, in that we ask our subscribers, basically considering everything that they've lived with their car, the reliability, fuel economy, performance, comfort, everything, would they buy it again if they had it to do over again? Mm-hmm. And it's very telling answers that they give us, and from those answers we create what we call owner satisfaction ratings, which we also feature in the April issue. And the Mini Cooper came out with one of the highest ratings among the owner satisfaction. So people, you really like the car. Now, on the other hand, the reliability of it has not been very good.
Right.
And so, I think, BMW, of course, makes it. It might be worth holding out a little longer until they get some of the bugs worked out. Unless a lot of people just, want to have that fun and are willing to put up with a car that has below average reliability. And that's part of the judgment call you make. Certainly there are many different aspects you evaluate before buying a car, and reliability is just one slice of the pie.
Right.
But that particular slice with the Mini Cooper hasn't been so good so far.
Right. And have you heard anything about, or do you have any comments on how to sort of deal with warranties and the fact that, you know, here we are in a community that doesn't offer service? I mean, is that an issue that comes into play for...
Well, to tell you the truth, I'm not that familiar with the service attributes of the Mini. I don't know. Have you talked to a BMW dealer to see if they service them?
Yeah, I have, and I know that they don't, and that once you take it to another dealer, that you could then void the warranty as a whole. And so I guess my concern is that with that reliability being an issue, do I want to deal with it? And I know there's other vehicles that have similar arrangements. I've heard Lexus, I think, does that as well. You have to be serviced by a Lexus dealer while it's under warranty. So I just didn't know if, you know, Consumer Reports or any others
have
that kind of an issue.
Well, certainly, the fact that you're far from a dealer complicates the reliability issue.
Right.
That could be a problem. Now, I know that most manufacturers do allow you to take a car to other places when it's under warranty, even when it's under warranty, but you have to be careful to record everything that's done, keep receipts, that kind of thing. So if there's a problem, you can prove it. In fact, a couple years ago, we looked at the differences in price between taking a car to a dealership for regular maintenance intervals or taking it to independent repair shops to have the same things done. And the independent repair shops were much less expensive than the dealerships. And in fact, we found that even dealerships of the same make gave us sometimes widely different quotes for the same maintenance interval. So even when you do maintenance, it pays to shop around. But like I said, most manufacturers do allow you to take it to other places to have the maintenance done as long as you can back it up if there's a problem.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Thank you. This is a really interesting example of a car that has really grabbed a lot of people just by its looks. And apparently when you drive it, it's a lot of fun to drive. And that there's this interesting balancing act that people are doing between how the way they feel about the car and the potential problems that it might have. And I find myself going back to, again, that sort of conventional wisdom about, well, maybe you want to wait at least a year when a new car is introduced, because if there are any problems, then it'll take them some time to get it worked out. You'd have to think that the people at BMW know how to build cars. So what do you think is really going on with this car, and why is it that it seems to have had so many problems?
That's a good question. BMW certainly knows how to build cars. They have very fun to drive cars. They usually do very well in our testing. Typically, in our test scoring, they at the top of their categories. But they have also had problems with keeping vehicles above average in our reliability surveys. And then that gets back to what we were talking about earlier about the, you know, Europeans being third on the totem pole now in terms of reliability when you look across the board. BMW 3 Series is above average in our survey, but some of the other models are below average, and their 7 Series sedan, which is, you know, their top-of-the-line sedan, had many problems, had real problems with in our reliability data. In fact, the 2003 7 Series had more problems than an 8-year-old Lexus LS 400.
Wow.
Things happen, and again, we can look at looking at the European cars again as an example. One could argue that a lot of them that are sold in this country are higher-end models with more power equipment, more things that can go wrong, and certainly that's where we are seeing a lot of the problems, is in electrical systems, in power accessories, that kind of stuff. But again, you can also then turn around and look at Japanese cars like Lexus and Infiniti and Acura that have virtually the same type of equipment and yet still get excellent reliability.
We are a little bit past the midpoint here. We have some other calls we'll get right to. I would just like to introduce again our guest. Rick Paul is automotive editor at Consumer Reports and has been there since June of 2000. He's responsible for automotive editorial content in their monthly issues and also their special publications. Before going to work for Consumer Reports, he was for 9 years senior feature editor at Motor Trend magazine in Los Angeles. And if you're in the market for a new car, you might want to take a look at the April issue of Consumer Reports. It's their annual auto issue, and they rate cars on a number of categories and things like safety and family friendliness and reliability and how popular they are with their owners and a number of things like that. So you might go out and take a look at the magazine. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
Hi. I want to get back to your discussion about the hybrid. I have a few questions. The first is, I do have a copy of the April Consumer Reports, and I was read with interest the material about the Honda Accord Hybrid. I heard you mention in passing that you think it'll come out in September. Is that a firm date, or and can you say anything more about that Accord Hybrid?
One thing that I've learned by watching the auto industry is it's never a firm date.
Uh-huh.
It is expected this fall. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean September. Uh-huh. And we have certainly seen many cases where it's even been pushed beyond that. For instance, the Ford Escape Hybrid was originally supposed to be out last summer, and we're looking at it maybe this summer, hopefully this summer. So things do get pushed back. Basically, as far as the Accord Hybrid goes, it will be using Honda's hybrid system, same one that's used in the
Civic.
Plus, it'll be coupled with with a V6 engine.
Yeah, I saw the variable cylinder management.
Right, uh-huh. And that's an interesting system that it's a feature we'll probably be seeing more of going forward, where when the car gets to a cruising on the highway where it doesn't need a lot of power, it will automatically cut out three of the six cylinders. And that is another fuel-saving measure, so you're using less gas to just cruise. Then if you need the power to pass, to accelerate, whatever, the three cylinders will come back in and you'll have all six going. And GM has a similar engine system like that, and like I said, I think we'll be seeing more of this happening. And it's another way that they're going to be able to stretch gas mileage. So the Accord will have that, plus it'll have the hybrid system. And now, we have no way of estimating what the fuel economy will be at this point.
Yeah, has that system been used in Japan, or is it brand new and therefore of more questionable reliability? That's one question I have, and that sort of brings up another set of questions, which is, in terms of getting service for either, let's say, the Honda Accord, Honda Civic Hybrid, or the Toyota Prius Hybrid, you're mm-hmm. pretty much dependent on the dealer.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I would be hesitant to go to a independent
right.
shop for hybrid.
So therefore, what is what sort of service do those need, and what's lifetime on things like battery, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of that?
I know that the battery pack is certainly a question mark right now. We're told, the Prius battery pack, for instance, has a warranty of 8 years or 100,000 miles, I believe.
Mm.
So it's a long time.
Yeah.
And then in states that use the California regulations, clean air regulations, that's even boosted to 10 years. So it does have a good warranty on the battery pack and the hybrid system, and that, and certainly, Toyota and Honda also has a long warranty on those systems. And that's their way of helping to ease, you know, buyers' concern about this new technology. Now, once the warranty's up down the road a ways, you know, what the reliability of the battery pack will be or how long it will be durable is one of the questions that still remains unanswered. Toyota spokesman told us that it's supposed to be it's supposed to last the life of the vehicle, but you know that's Toyota, so we have no way of verifying that. They estimate now that that on the Prius the pack, if it had to be replaced today, which everything's under warranty at this point, so it's a theoretical thing, but. If it had to be replaced today out of warranty, it would cost between $3,000 and $3,500. But they also say that that price should come down significantly by the time the first warranties are up. That's an area we're just going to have to wait and see how they do and how that works. And so it is one of the question marks in buying a hybrid this time.
Yeah, you said you're driving a Prius?
Yes,
On a regular basis or just today for this interview?
No, I drive all the vehicles that we test, and it just so happens we have the Prius at our office for this month, and so I'm spending at least a week in it myself to you know, get used to it. Now I have to explain that we have a Consumer Reports has their own test facility in Connecticut, and I work in New York, and we have it's a facility. It's basically one of the best test facilities of any publication. Go ahead. You were going to say.
I was going to say I'm familiar. I've been using Consumer Reports in terms of all my vehicle purchases, and that goes back to the 1980s. So
good.
I'm very happy with the Consumer Reports review, and that's why I was particularly looking forward to finding out about the Honda Accord Hybrid, since I'm thinking about that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, I've had a little static there.
Okay. Well, I guess, did we get all your questions,
yeah.
Carl?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm taken care of.
Thank you very
much.
Let's go on here. We got somebody on a cell phone in line two. Let's do that. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Probably catching up. Continuing that same line, is there any thought of putting a diesel in a minivan or a hybrid power plant by any of the manufacturers?
Diesel. Some manufacturers do see diesels as really their direction to tackle this fuel economy thing. Chrysler, for instance, is coming out with a Jeep Liberty diesel. The Mercedes-Benz diesel E-Class will be returning. So some manufacturers do see diesel as a more promising route than hybrid for them. Now, there have been prototype hybrids that have run with a diesel, the electric motor and a diesel engine, although I right now don't know of any production models that will have that combination.
So Honda doesn't plan on doing a hybrid minivan, their Odyssey in hybrid, or Chrysler doesn't plan on bringing out their Caravan or Town and Country then, hybrid or diesel?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see an Odyssey hybrid down the road, but from what they've announced so far, there's no plans at this time. I think it really depends on how cars like the Accord and the SUVs that are coming up are accepted. If they sell well, then certainly automakers will be encouraged to make a hybrid system available on more types of models. For diesel, you know, I think that's an easier call, and again, it depends on how the initial diesel vehicles sell. One of the things, diesel technology has come a long way since, you know, in the last couple of decades. And they're smoother, they're cleaner, but they still pollute more than a conventional gasoline engine in at least a couple areas, particulates and nitrous oxide emissions, for example. I think the fuel companies will be taking sulfur out of the gasoline in the next couple years, which will help diesels be even cleaner. So that will make them, I think, more publicly acceptable. I'm interested to see how this all pans out as far as the return of diesels into the U.S. marketplace.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to our next caller, and this is back in Champaign in line one.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you a question about pricing and cost.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to take my consumers with me when I went to the dealer. This is for Honda. And he quoted me a price for the Honda Civic and Honda Accord. And when I got back, I realized that the price he quoted me was over $3,000 more than the price you list. And I just wonder, I guess I'm not sure what my question is exactly. Is this usual? And I suppose you can get down a little bit, but, you know, how do they decide what they're going to charge? Yeah, how do you price it and how do they price it?
Yeah. First of all, let me ask you, when you say that it was $3,000 over what we list, where did you see the price that we list?
In consumers.
In the April issue?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I guess...
Under each...
Right, under each little profile there of the car. Okay, I just want to make sure
you
we...
list a price.
Yeah. Now, those prices...
you do have a range, but...
Right. Yeah, I just want to make sure I knew exactly what you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Those prices that are listed under there are the base price range, and the base price is the vehicle, this manufacturer suggested retail price without any options. So that would be basically the lowest you could buy it.
If you have air conditioning, is that an added?
Yeah, well... Not always, but it can be. It depends on the model. Sometimes it's standard equipment, other times it's optional, and that's where you have to look carefully at what you're being quoted.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, it's not unusual for a vehicle to be, with optioned out with a lot of extras to be $3,000 over the base price. That's not unusual at all.
Yeah.
Although, what we recommend people do is not really base their price on the sticker price that's on the outside, on the window. Recommend that people find out what the dealer paid for the car and then negotiate up from that.
And how do you find that out?
Well, there's different ways. Basically, there's a dealer invoice price, which is published in basically a lot of places now. You can find it on websites such as Edmunds.com.
Edmunds?
Yeah, Edmunds, EDMUNDS.com. Kelley Blue Book's website, which is KBB.com. KBB.com.
Uh-huh.
They do have dealer invoice price there. And when you see the dealer invoice, you can see how much the car has been marked up for retail. Now, even the dealer invoice is not necessarily what the dealer actually paid for the car, because often there's sales incentives behind the scenes that give the dealer more profit margin. And that's an area where our Consumer Reports tries to help people with what's called a new car price report. And these are $12 each, and you can order it through our website. But basically, it includes a price we call the CR wholesale price, and that is based on the dealer invoice plus any dealer incentives that are current at the time, such as what's called a holdback, which is a little refund the manufacturers give the dealers, or sales incentives where a dealer, if they sell a certain model, they'll get some money back. And these kind of incentives give the dealer extra profit margin. And if you know that about this extra profit margin, then you know how much leeway the dealer has in the price range. So you can, even if you allow them what's a reasonable profit margin, maybe 4-8%, you can still get the final price can still be much lower than the sticker price.
what was I going to say? Well, okay. I assume that when they originally quote you a price, that they expect you to bargain. Well, I know what I was going to ask you. The dealer price, does it vary about geographic location?
Usually not, no, but the incentives can vary. The incentives, like I said, the behind-the-scenes dealer incentives can be regionally based.
Uh-huh, right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. I thank you for the call. We have about 12 minutes left. Maybe I'll just introduce again our guest. We're talking with Rick Paul. He is automotive editor at Consumer Reports, and he's the guy who's responsible for the automotive editorial content in Consumer Reports. If you're in the market for a new car, you might want to look at the April issue of Consumer Reports. That's their annual auto issue. We have a number of people standing by here, and we'll go next to Hartsburg, Illinois, our toll-free line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was a long-time happy owner of a Saturn S-Series and recently bought an Ion, and I wanted to ask a couple of things. One is it seems I see very little, very few Ions out, and it makes me wonder about the future of the car. And then after I bought it, I checked Consumer's Reports, and notice that the reliability is a little bit uncertain, and wanted to inquire about the reliability issues. And I guess also, with Saturn changing and their relationship with GM, what future changes will Saturns have?
Well, let's take it one step at a time. The Ion actually did well in our reliability survey. In our most recent, for the 03 model, it got above average rating for reliability. In our test, however, we rated only fair. In our small car category, which is about 15 models included there, it's like third from the bottom. So we weren't real crazy with the Ion in terms of our testing of it. Now, as far as changes going forward, that's not something that I have any information about.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Okay. All right. Let's go to next Atlanta, Illinois. This is line 3. Hello.
Hi. Nice talking to you. Back to questions on a Mini Cooper. I'm only a few miles from the guy from Hartsburg, by the way, so that's unusual. But anyway, I have a Mini Cooper, and like the lady that called earlier, I'm a long ways from service. And I, you know, used to English cars, being that the car is BMW, but it is made in England. I'm used to reliability problems. But I just wondered what areas of the car should I look for as far as being unreliable. And then the second question is, I understand the engine, the Tritec engine, is a Chrysler designed engine that's made in Brazil, and I just wondered, what is the reliability of that engine? I understand that it's in other European cars also, and I'll listen here.
Mm-hmm. What model Mini Cooper do you have?
It's an S. It's a 2004.
Okay. We have 2 years' worth of data on the Mini Cooper for the 02 and 03 models. In the 03 model, which was new at the time that our survey was being done, it was having some problems in cooling, transmission, electrical, and also in power equipment and body integrity, which is like squeaks and rattles, things like that. These were areas in which it was below average compared with the average of all other vehicles out there. The engine, however, has been excellent in terms of reliability for both the years that we have data for.
Well, see, it's an American design engine, so there you go. Well, I appreciate that. So the electronics are suspect, and I don't know about the 6-speed versus the 5-speed, but the transmission, it could be suspect.
Yeah, I would say that it's from our data, people have told us that they've had more problems with the transmission than on a normal car, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you very, very much.
All right, thank you. Over to Indiana for another caller, line two. Hello.
Well, I was wondering if you've ever considered sectioning the world automobile production other than just European, Asian, and United States, because, you know, I know there's other countries like Brazil and stuff. I was wondering if it's ever been sectioned so you could see, like, production per worker or production per unit of something, you know.
Yeah, we don't slice it in that that much detail. In fact, I will say that even our look at different nationalities is, you know, kind of rounding things off, so to speak, because it's such a global auto market right now. You know, there's a lot of import cars that that are built in the United States. There's U.S. cars that are built overseas. There's automakers, you know, there's U.S. automakers that own import brands. GM owns Saab, Ford owns Volvo, for instance. And then, of course, you know, Daimler Chrysler, which is basically a German company, owns Chrysler. So when we do look at the big three, the big American automakers, we do just assign them to the brand nationality. We don't analyze it based on a model by model basis and which model is produced where. So it is kind of a general look at things.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
All right. I think we have another caller here on cell phone, line one. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, my wife and I have a Civic Hybrid, and we're both very pleased with it, and we really like the hybrid technology, so much so, in fact, that at one time I had heard that Toyota was considering coming out with a pickup that was a pickup truck that was a hybrid technology. I was wondering if you knew of anything in that vein, and if you would have any ideas on, you know, what if it'd be a full size or a mini, or what kind of horsepower it might have.
I've heard talk about bringing up pickups with a hybrid engine. I haven't heard specifically about Toyota, but I think GM was looking at it a year or two ago. Although there's no firm plans that I've heard announced at this point, so I think pickups, would still be a little ways off.
Really? Okay. So, but you don't? Do you have any idea on whether they were considering S10 size trucks or larger sizes?
The ones that I had heard, I think, were full size.
Mm-hmm. And how many years do you think that might be down the line?
You know, I have no way of telling that.
Okay.
There's so many variables, and like I previously said, that I think a lot of it depends on how the initial hybrids sell. And if they do well, then automakers will be encouraged to bring out more models with that option. And if they don't do well, then certainly that will stymie the growth of that segment.
Mm-hmm, sure. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Let's go to Bourbonus. At least get one more call here. Line four. Hello.
Hi, and thanks for saying Bourbonus. I would like, please, your opinion of the 05 Touareg and the Volvo SUV.
Right. They're both, you know, good vehicles. The XC90, I should say, Volvo.
That's
in a very competitive category because of the price and the you know, it's an upscale SUV, as is the Touareg, and both of them are basically in mid pack in our ratings, but they still did very good, and that's an indication of how strong this segment is. If you were able to pick up the April issue, for instance, you'd see a complete ratings of all the vehicles we've tested, which is about 182, and they're all listed by category, so you can scan the whole SUV category and see how our ratings fall.
Is that for 04 or 05 models?
We tested 04 XC90 and Touareg.
Do you have a line on the 05s?
No, I don't, unfortunately.
Okay.
But like I said, they they did well in the testing. We rated them very good, but because it's such a strong category, they're still only mid-pack in that category.
Okay. Do you endorse David's dictum that he issued a while back that you shouldn't buy a car in its first year, a model in its first year?
I think from a dollars and cents standpoint, yes, that's good advice. We do recommend, you know, that you wait, you know, but we also understand that there's a lot of passion out there for new vehicles, and so, you know, that's, people don't always take the dollars and cents look at things. You know, it's there. Obviously, there's a lot of times when there are you know, recalls or bugs to be worked out, and Ford has certainly been an example of this. Their Focus, for instance, when it first came out 4 or 5 years ago, had a lot of recalls, a lot of problems. It did very bad in our reliability surveys, and it's really just in the last couple of years that we started to see the reliability on the Focus, for instance, come up to average or above. So, you know, it's generally good advice. Now, for some reason, vehicles like Toyota and Honda, companies like that, tend to, they have somehow been able to find a way to bring out vehicles that are reliable right out of the gate, with few exceptions.
We got to go. I'm here at the end of the time. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Paul, for talking with us today.
I enjoyed it.
We appreciate it. Rick Paul, automotive editor of Consumer Reports. The April issue is their annual auto issue, so if you're in the market for a new car, you might want to look at it.